Hello, my name is Ellie Ugel. I'm a fourth year audiology student currently doing my integrated master's year at the University of Southampton. This is also my fourth year being a member of the BAA Early Professionals Committee. So today's podcast is part of the People Who Inspire Us series, and today I have with me my chosen inspirational person. I'll just provide some context on why I've chosen this particular individual, what I find inspiring about them and who they are. So back when I was in my first year of studying audiology, part of our learning involved watching videos on what good conduct looked like from an audiologist, how to display person-centered care, as well as what a good history take and general patient questioning looked like. Then fast forward to my second year of study, I co-hosted with Sarah Hussain a careers webinar series for the BAA, in which I recognised one of the speakers to be from them same videos that I'd watched in my first year. But this was the first time I actually found out more about this individual, what they'd achieved throughout their audiology career, and it really excited me. It felt close to my own dreams and my own career aspirations. And since then, I followed this individual on LinkedIn. I wanted to stay in the loop of her progress, and I'm still as excited and happy for her and what she's continually achieving. So who is this person? Well, this person is an audiologist. They've worked within the NHS, for a national chain, for a hearing aid manufacturer, and she is a director. She has her own self-made private practice. Since 2018, she has successfully expanded her business into three practices, which also starred as a finalist in the New Business of the Year Ilkley Business Awards. This individual has appeared in the Harrogate Advertiser, the Independent Advisor, the Yorkshire Post, as well as on a radio podcast for Your Harrogate. So I'd like to give a warm welcome to my inspirational person, which is Emily Woodmansey.
Oh, Ella, that was the most gorgeous introduction. I don't think I've ever had one so lovely. Thank you.
How are you today? Are you okay?
Really good, thank you. Really good. How are you?
I'm good as well, thank you. Really excited for today.
Definitely. It's so kind of you to ask me. I'm excited to chat.
Oh, I mean, as I was preparing my introduction, I was looking over your LinkedIn and I noticed that you posted someone that you found inspiring recently, and yes. It gave me a bit of a giggle because I thought it's interesting how the people who we find inspiring also have individuals they find inspiring in the same field.
Definitely. It's funny you say it, because when you were talking, my mind drifted to her. She was someone I'd followed again online. I met her in person for the first time a few weeks ago. And for me, she walked into a room and went, Emily. Oh. And I had the you know my name moment. Okay. It's nice to have people within your industry that you can look to, and it feels like a positive thing for audiology that there's other audiologists that make us think, oh, I'd like to do that, or people who kind of make you think differently, or it's really positive, especially when it's women.
Exactly. It's very supportive. So I have a few questions here for you today. So if we get stuck in, could you tell us about your journey in the audiology field and what inspired you to pursue a career in audiology?
For sure. So if I go right back to the beginning, I obviously talked too much at school. I was the chatty one. I was sort of being sent out of class to sit on my own somewhere quiet. But I enjoyed science. Mm-hmm. So when I went through and did my A-levels, I ended up doing biology, chemistry, physics and psychology. I only did AS physics. That was hard. So I came out with these kind of sciencey A-levels, and I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew I liked talking to people, and I knew I wanted to go into healthcare in some form. But I think when you're like 17, 18 years old, they're really big decisions that you're making for the rest of your life. So I was really unsure. I didn't apply to university from school. I made a decision just to like take a breath, just to pause. I found even just the idea of waiting for A-level results and a university offer being dependent on them, I just found that thought, like the thought, too stressful, let alone actually doing that. My mum's a teacher and she was just like, stop, just pause.
Mm-hmm.
You've plenty of time. So I took a year away. I went away with a charity called Project Trust.
Mm-hmm.
And they, at the time, sent 17 to 19 year olds to developing countries and put them into kind of quite well supported projects.
Mm-hmm.
So you would do 12 months with a partner that they put you with and then kind of come home. So mm-hmm. I was placed in a project in South America, in Peru.
Yeah.
And it was there that I met a little girl called Rocio, and Rocio was profoundly deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of for a teeny bit of context, Peru, 2006, kind of real economic challenges for them there, political stability to a degree, but economical challenges. So I was staying in this children's home where of our 64 children, 63 were sort of social orphans. We only had one whose parents had passed away.
Mm-hmm.
So Rocio's parents were alive and well, they would visit, but she had been placed where we were because there was a deaf church nearby.
Mm-hmm.
And Rocio didn't sign, she didn't speak, she didn't wear hearing aids. She kind of did this sort of complex charades. And because we didn't speak Spanish,
mm-hmm.
she would come and get us and a lot of our, she was sort of our interpreter. She was 11 when we got there and she was learning sign language. She was developing, mm-hmm. her communication was developing, but some really difficult things happened to her while we were there, like hideous things happened to her while we were there. And she spent even more and more time with us. There was an Italian charity that brought her some hearing aids. And I can remember her coming to me and shaking water out of them and me thinking, I don't know anything about these, but I don't think water should be, she'd obviously worn them in the shower or something like that. I will never know what her hearing loss was. As an 18 year old, I can confess that I could slam a door and make her jump, but that was the only way we could, there was no way to get her to respond to any sound with or without hearing aids in. And she sort of became my quite naive inspiration. I felt a bit like, as I started reading about audiology and applying for audiology courses from Peru, I sort of felt like I could fix her, that somehow I could find a way to get her cochlear implants, or I was really naive. I knew nothing about audiology, but it turned out that that kind of inspiration actually was a career where there was science and psychology and communication, and so it was her who kind of led me down this path of exploration into a world that I would have never really considered before that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a beautiful inspiration and what's led you to this field, and I think you would have done her so proud with everything that you've done and everything that you've achieved. So
thank you.
So what would you say are some significant milestones or turning points in your career that you would say have shaped your path as an audiologist? Because I feel like you've done so much in your journey. What would the key points be if you had to summarize it all?
I think sometimes when you look back on the key points, they're They're like moments that don't seem like moments at the time. But kind of, I'm quite a visual person, so I can, there are some conversations that I can still sort of see where I was stood when I had them. So if I start with after my degree, I worked in a big NHS teaching hospital. And I can remember within a couple of days of being there, their head of service pulling me aside and saying, I want you to be involved in this project. And then sort of smiling, a little chuckle, and saying, you're new, I can make you do it, no one else wants to. And, you know, it was positive. It was a, you know, come on, get involved. I felt like I had to. I didn't know what it was. And it was the work that we did with the IDA Institute. You know, I couldn't have had a better experience, but it was someone looking and thinking, oh, we need another person for this. And that taught me about saying yes to opportunities. Mm-hmm. Even if you think, oh, I don't really want to, I don't really know, I'm new, I'm, you know, just getting stuck in and thinking, you know, I would have never properly met people like Mel Ferguson if I hadn't got involved with some of the work with IDA. I wouldn't have traveled to Denmark to see what they did. You know, I think no one else really, and well, not many other people in the team wanted to be filmed, and I didn't really care. So conversations like that. Later in that same team, I can remember the day that somebody senior, so it was all legitimate, but helped me sneak out to a job interview for the national chain that I went to. So I did, I have to think now, 3 years in the NHS. And then I moved to a national chain. And I know that sounds quite quick, but my family circumstances changed. And I was working a good few hours from where I was working and living, a good few hours from where my family was. And I needed to come home. That was my big motivator. I needed an audiology job in Yorkshire. And I couldn't find one in the NHS. So I can remember the person who kind of said, yeah, we'll send this person in to cover your clinic for like an hour here and 10 minutes there, and then you can go and do this interview, which, you know, meant that I could do that. The manager then that I had initially in that role, who would just say to me, Emily, go sprinkle your stardust. And off I'd go. You know, I was one of the first people in that chain to get, like, when their oracles were rolled out, because I was in the head office one day and I was like, oh, I know how to use that. And they were like, perfect, have one, we'll send it out next week. You know, those silly little things that there's a bit of luck, but a bit of enthusiasm to go with it. And then, yeah, just little things. So those tiny little things that shouldn't have been anything. And sometimes the negative. So I wouldn't have moved to the manufacturer if a later manager in that same private company hadn't sent a message saying that at the end of each day, I had to send a text message to say how many ears I had sold. And I thought, there is no way that I'm going to sell ears. Yeah. Like, that's not what we do. And so things that can seem really negative, really icky, that actually push you to move on to the next thing, the thing that actually helps you again.
Yeah. So what was it that finalised your decision to start the hearing suite?
So I think one of the things that I would be very honest about in my career is that when I've worked in organisations, I as a person have found it challenging to move up within an organisation. Mm-hmm. So I think I think there are some people who are exceptionally good at doing that for really good reasons, and it's not something that I have as a strength. I can certainly signpost people to people who've done that really successfully. I kind of wish I'd been signposted to in the past. But for me, opening my own practice was something I wanted to do for a long time, but I wasn't brave enough. And then when I worked for the manufacturer, a couple of people started doing it. So two people left just before I did. And I suddenly thought, crikey, I'm going to have, they're doing this. It felt like it was time. I needed to do it. And I was at a bit of a junction there as well, because I'd been passed over for a promotion twice. And I felt like I didn't have space to grow there.
Yeah.
Which on reflection was right. So I needed to make my own space to grow in.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely. You've done really well with that as well. Do you think it was the best decision that you made for yourself at that point?
Definitely. But I think when I look back, I've seen a side to the NHS. I love the NHS. I think they do the most incredible job with the resources they have. I really do. I have really good friends in the NHS, both locally and further afield. I have a feel for what happens in the national chains and what the pros and the cons are. And coming from a manufacturer as well, again, I can see some of their agenda. So I think having been in those three places, it prepared me well to become an independent, because I'd got not a 360 of the industry, but a bit of a view of some of the different sides.
Have there been any moments that you've doubted your decision to do this, or you've, I don't want to say regret, but
absolutely. Yeah, I think the thing I observe as a small business owner out of industry is that people sit around with their piles of money and flash cars saying how easy it is to start a business. Mm-hmm. They're definitely lying, you know? And I never want to be like, oh, all doom and gloom, but like it's hard. It's, you know, one of the things I was conscious of in my first year was that I had to fall on my sword quite a lot, because sometimes when you open a private practice, there are times when you have to make almost a really difficult decision between what's between your best interests and what's your patient's best interests. And I felt very strongly that I had to make that decision in favour of the patient every time. And, you know, sometimes that caused me sleepless nights. And meant that I thought, you know, will the business be open next week? Will we be able to do this? And I wouldn't want to mislead people to think, I'm sure for some it's super easy, but when you have to put all your systems and processes and things together yourself, I made myself a little promise when I opened that if I couldn't get it off the ground, if I couldn't sustain it, I'd get a job again, and I would, in my own time, I would look after the people who'd purchased hearing aids from me.
Mm.
That was how I kind of rationalised it. But did I ever regret doing it? No. Mm. Have I aged a bit more? Yes. You know, it's if you want to get away from stress, don't do it. But it's I love it. I love that we can, you know, we can push the boundaries of things. So like one of my audiologists recently is qualified as a lip reading teacher, because we felt like locally there was a need that went above what we could offer in clinic. We've just finished our first like introduction course, and watching those eight people who've gone through, some who are my clients, my patients, some who we haven't met before, but watching the kind of, even just the camaraderie of that little group of people has just been, yeah, really special.
So you might have mentioned a few people and a few experiences already, but who are the individuals or experiences that you think have had a profound impact on your professional development and inspired you along the way?
Yeah, so I think I almost feel there've been professionals along the way, hugely. Mm-hmm. But I think rather than naming everybody, I almost want to talk about a clinic that I visited once, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So I won't say where he was, but people who've come across him will know who he is. So he's run a clinic for a long time. It's his own private practice. And he has the art of making people feel special. He is just so talented. He's a good audiologist, he is. But the way he makes people feel listened to and heard. And I only ever spent a day with him. It was in my life as in a manufacturer. And I've never come across a clinician like that before. Somebody who didn't just know his client's like wife's name. He just gave people this space where they could be themselves and talk about hearing and communication and what they needed and wanted. And I always think of him and think of it almost like the art of making people feel special. And I feel like that's something that's really stuck with me as something that is like I almost want to call it a soft skill. But something that's just really precious and maybe overlooked or undervalued, but can make a huge difference. I mean, even me visiting him, I felt special. You know, he didn't give me gifts, and I don't think he even made me a cup of tea. But you know, I think it's really interesting when you watch someone who goes off the scale to making someone feel valued and special. I think that's really something.
So is that something that you think you try to implement going forward as a skill for yourself?
Definitely.
So linked to that, there was a question on in your opinion, what qualities or skills would you say are essential for a successful audiologist?
So I think I could be wrong, but I feel like by the time someone's interested in audiology, they're someone who likes to communicate.
Yeah.
They're someone who likes to communicate. I think I can be guilty of, a few of us can, of talking more than we listen. I always go back to that like visual of like two ears, one mouth, use in proportion, because I think we can be chatty people. But I think a good audiologist has some determination and curiosity, because I think that audiology is ever changing. And I think if, you know, when I was a student, I'm sure we were fitting like a Prisma 2 Pro, and I loved that hearing aid. If I'd stuck with that, what experience would my patients be having now? You know, it's there's that openness to change and learn and develop and think, oh, cool, okay, Bluetooth was awesome. Let's look at Auracast. That sounds amazing. You know, and I think, that curiosity, compassion, and a bit of awareness of the people around us. So, you know, we do a lot of wax removal, for example, in our practice, and I'm conscious when I'm training other clinicians that I actually spend a good deal of time away from the ear, away from the microscope, looking at the facial expression of the person, just to make sure that, you know, we're not in some kind of grimace as we're doing the procedure, that they look relaxed and like, you know, they might be breathing, and, you know, people hold their breath when they have wax removal done every time. Those kind of, that compassion and kindness, definitely.
So as an inspirational figure in audiology, what role do you think audiologists play in improving the quality of life for those with hearing impairments?
I think it's huge. I really think it's huge. I recently listened to a talk by an actress and author, Samantha Baines. I don't know if you've come across her. She's incredible. And she was talking about, she was using terms like full hearing. So instead of normal hearing, full hearing. I loved that. But I think the impact that audiologists have for people with degrees of hearing loss, it's huge. I think the spectrum of it is big as well, because I completely acknowledge that there's a part of the deaf community that we may not be, may not want to interact and have their own communication, have their own language, have their own style, and you know, an audiologist might not necessarily be part of that. But I think for other people with hearing loss, it's huge. There's not a lot of other healthcare professionals even to advocate for them. You know, it's, I find, I have conversations with companies all the time where I say, please could you email me? And then they ring me. No, I don't have a hearing loss. It's just my communication preference. How difficult must that be when you've got a hearing loss, you know? So I think you can look at it very simply in terms of ear care and hearing aids, but then supporting them with other people around them communicating and how to, yeah. Because I think when you've worked with hearing aids for a while, you can do the whole, oh, there isn't a stigma anymore. Well, I might not have a stigma, but people certainly come up against challenges. So, yeah, I'd say it's huge.
Mm-hmm. And how do you stay updated with the latest advancements and research in audiology? I know you just mentioned Samantha Baines. Mm. Any other things that you do to keep yourself updated?
Totally. So I think we're really lucky in the UK because there are different professional bodies that kind of align with different parts of the industry. So I find that AHIP, which is the Association of Independent Hearing Healthcare Professionals, that's the professional body that I see as my professional body because I am independent and I sit there with other independent small business owners. But I also think that there's a huge place for BAA, BSHA. I'm also always interested in what BSA are doing and have to say. So I think guided by professional bodies, we attend conferences, that side of things. I find LinkedIn really helpful. I don't see it as a job site anymore. You know, I find it thought-provoking and I'll see something on there and then I'll go and read the paper behind it, you know, and I enjoy LinkedIn for that. I've seen, you know, kind of audiology content creators through that who, you know, a new product's released and yeah, I'll read what the manufacturer says. I'll go to their launch event, but I'll have a listen to a couple of independent reviews as well and see what someone without a financial incentive has to say, you know. Yeah. I think that that's where I do a lot of my learning and developing, definitely.
I love how that's still something that you find is important, that even as you've got your dream set out, I'm sure there's still more that you want to add to it and there's still more that you want to accomplish, but you still find it very important that you want to still learn and you want to still grow.
I think it's really dangerous when you stop learning on lots of levels, you know. Even when I look at like family members, it was important for me and my brother when iPads came out that my mum had an iPad. You know, I think if you do little steps and keep yourself updated, it's easy. I think suddenly if someone had to learn an iPad now, it's like, ooh, it's a bit of a contrast. So yeah, I think for me, learning is everything. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to pause a second, if that's all right. Sorry. Me talking too much, as always. Carry on.
So as we mentioned, kind of new technology, mm-hmm. what do you think your thoughts are on where audiology is going in the future?
Totally. So I think last year I was asked a lot of questions about over-the-counter. Mm. So kind of internally and from people out of industry. And I think over-the-counter made a lot of noise for a little impact. I don't think many of us should be wasting too much time thinking about over-the-counter. Mm-hmm. I think when we look at short-term, I mentioned Auracast earlier. I'm really excited about Auracast. And it's kind of, people probably know already, but it's that kind of broadcast Bluetooth rather mm-hmm. than single device Bluetooth. And I think we'll see a lot more of that in 2024. So I think short-term, it's that kind of thing I'm excited for. Longer term, what will these manufacturers come up with next? I think our conversations have to come back to the service that we provide, mm-hmm. because I think the days of hearing aid off you go, they're passing. You know, you always like to think you're doing a good job. And people who have hearing aids with us, they have a detailed consultation, takes a couple of hours. They try some hearing aids for a good few weeks. By the time they come to purchase, they've probably spent 4 hours with us. They then see us every 3 months. Now, I tell you this because some of my own clients have been through the lip reading class mm-hmm. that we've done recently. And one of them came in for her follow-up the other day with a list. And I love it when they have a list. I do. It's wonderful. Anyway, really intelligent woman, come from a medical profession, retired, really high level. And the things we haven't talked about, this list of things, she sat there and she's like, is my hearing loss congenital? And I was like, oh, okay, yeah, right, yes. We've got the lingo, okay, and talking through the loop system and the pros and the cons and where hair's gone, the kind of, she probably had 8 points on this list of things that our audiologist had talked through as like an introduction to hearing that she and I had never discussed. And I think that things like that, arming people with information and the right information, I hope that that's a big part of audiology for the future. Mm-hmm. My other little thing, well, it's not little, it's huge, but I think, so I'm 35, and I think in my working career, I think we'll see stem cell regeneration for acquired hearing loss.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
Excited, really mm-hmm. excited. I don't know what format that will be, and how controversially medical model that will be, but I think in some form we'll see that. And I think if we do see that, then the role of the audiologist will be ever changing again. But I see that as exciting and positive, but I don't know when that will be.
It's quite funny that you have a positive look on it, because I've spoken to other individuals and they've said, we don't know what's going to happen to our jobs, and does that mean audiology is just going to change, and are we not going to be doing as much? So it's quite refreshing to have a different perspective on that.
Definitely, because, you know, so go brass tacks with it, let's think it through. So you'll still start to think you've got a hearing loss, you'll still ignore it for a little while, you'll still need your hearing testing. Mm-hmm. Who's gonna regenerate the stem cells? Who's that gonna be? You know, potentially it could look like a different world, but it'll be a world where people are able to communicate better for longer, and that's what we do, that's what we want. And, you know, if that's administered in a different way, or it's administered through ENT, or I am up for it and on board, and I think, you know, you in our clinics as well, we differentiate between hearing and listening, and there's a whole nother conversation. That's an area that I'm doing a lot of learning in at the moment, and I still have a lot more to learn. But just because you bring someone's hearing levels back, inverted commas, keep going with the podcast, just because you bring someone's hearing levels back, what does their brain then do with it? You know, we don't, I mean, I am not a cochlear implant audiologist, you know, I'm not a clinical scientist, but I don't just pop a cochlear implant in and send people off. That's not it done, is it? You know, so yeah, I think I do see that on the horizon, but it's positive, it's exciting, definitely.
I think we'll have our final question now, which I'm going to merge. What advice would you give to other audiologists who may want to start their own private practice? And what advice would you give to individuals who might be starting to consider a career in audiology?
Cool.
So I might have sort of maybe flipped them around, but yeah.
No, that's all good. I'll answer them the other way around. So I think if somebody is looking to start a career in audiology, I would tell them to do it. Definitely. I think if they like communication and they like technology and they're up for a bit of change, you know, it's not going to be you learn one skill and you do that on repeat forever. I'd say do it. I think there's a huge shortage of audiologists. There's a huge shortage of audiologists with specialisms. And I think that, yeah, if you have an interest in helping somebody to communicate better with the people around them, then it is the career for you. I grew up talking to my grandparents around the dinner table. And I think if, you know, again, if those sort of memories kick in a bit of nostalgia, then again, it's a wonderful, it's a rewarding career. And there are so many areas to it. You know, I have friends in the universities. I have friends researching. I have friends training. Selling, you know, there are so many options for what you can do with a career in audiology. So I would wholeheartedly recommend it. And then the other question was, what would I recommend to somebody looking to start a private practice?
Yeah.
So, like, buckle up. So I would say starting a private practice is awesome. Definitely do it. I can talk to you some of the things I did, and then I can talk to you about some of the things I've seen people do recently that I'm like, genius, why didn't I do that? So first things first, I would say do not be scared to talk to the manufacturers.
Right.
So no gatekeeping. Manufacturers will help you to open a private practice. Manufacturers want you to open a private practice. And again, very kind of basic reason, they want you to sell their hearing aids.
Yeah.
But they will do arrangements with you where they will lend you some money so you can buy the fancy equipment. So you know that you can rent somewhere and get you started and set up. So look at manufacturers that you like dispensing and consider that.
Thank you so much for the time you've spared for us once again for the BAA. I hope that hearing this podcast, others will find you as inspiring as I do, or at least find the information that you've provided informative, have some awareness of what you've achieved, and they may even support you along your way and witness the next steps in your journey. As always, I wish you the very best, and I can't wait to see what's coming next for you.
Oh, thank you. And thank you so much for the invite and putting together such thoughtful questions. I've really, really enjoyed chatting.
I enjoyed chatting too.
Do it again.